Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Scared to Dance podcast with me, your host, Paul Richards. Over the course of this series, I'll be talking to some of my favourite people about their musical passions past and present. These include people who have DJed our club night, as well as those who have created our film nights. In this episode, I'm joined by Asha Lorenz, the frontwoman and creative force behind the band Sorry. Since emerging from London's DIY scene, Sorry have earned critical acclaim for their albums 9 to 5 and Anywhere But Here, blending gritty realism with hypnotic beauty. Their third album, Cosplay, has just been released on Domino, and I sat down with Asha to discuss the creative process behind their third album and their future plans. Hi, Asha. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Great.
I saw you a few weeks ago when you guest DJed at the Shackle Arms, which turned out to be our 10-year anniversary at the venue, which was nice. How was that as an experience for you? Have you done much DJing before?
I've done a few DJs, but I'm not a good DJ. I usually just speed everything up and turn it too quick to the next song. So I was with my partner once and we went and I started DJing and everyone left and she was really upset. I think the headphones were like different to what was going on or something. And then she was literally after, she was like, I think it was like they're going to be the end of the relationship. She was like so disgusted. So I asked my friends to come help at your one. I was the first time I was like, I'm going to prepare for this one. And I borrowed some decks. And then like, he didn't give me the wires and stuff. So I did try do stuff like the day before. But I was like a bit nervous. And then my friends came and they actually DJ. So that was fun.
They were great.
Yeah. Shout Jasper and Charlie and Hattie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. I like the babushka at the end.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was an epic little moment.
That was inspired.
Yeah.
And I invite you to come and DJ at the club after seeing your music video for Jive, which for anyone who hasn't seen it, features a figure dancing in a Scared to Dance t-shirt quite prominently amongst other activities in the video. Would you like to explain the video?
Yeah. My friend was DJing at this night and I took some mushrooms. I wanted to say that. I was a bit trippy. And we went back to someone's house and I knew that I had to make this video for Jive. And I was like on the roof and I was feeling a bit weird. I was like, wow, you could just, not in a dark way, I was like, wow, you could just jump off the roof. You know, in the Matrix kind of cracks when you're tripping. I was like, you could jump off this roof. And not in a dark way. But then suddenly my friend put these boxing gloves on me. And I looked off the edge and I like put my boxing glove and I was like, that is a really cool picture. I was like, this picture is like move. It was like suddenly like some vision came. I was like, I need to leave this party like now. And I left and I was like cycling. And as I was cycling, there was like, it was like 6 a.m. And I was thinking I was on a horse. And I was thinking, oh, it feels like medieval times or something. Something feels like really weird in the energy right now. And then there was only one guy. I started filming everything. I haven't had a feeling like that for a long time, like feeling really inspired all of a sudden. And there was this guy walking on with like pushing a trolley, empty trolley. And on his back, he had this leather jacket with an eagle on it or like this sort of bird. Anyway, in the morning, I woke up. I was like, I need to start looking at these videos. And I was like, oh, I'm going to make it for Jive. It'd be cool. And then I started getting into it. And my friend gave me that Scared to Dance t-shirt. So I was just doing it. And suddenly all this weird stuff. I can't even remember how it started. I think I was reading about AI a bit. And Jive's all about like swinging between light and darkness. And my friend sent me something about humanism, some essay. And it was start talking about this religion called Zoroastrianism. Do you know about it?
I don't.
It's called like the seven things of Hermes and there's sort of these seven principles and it's like same above as below is one of them. It's like everything's gendered and it's all about light and darkness. It's like the god, if you say it, the kind of god of it is all like something Mazda, Ahura Mazda. Anyway, there's like these seven spirits within it. Sort of. I might be getting some of this wrong, but they're saying that like AI, it's all about light energy as well. It's all kind of about light and I think it's Persian religion. They have the longest burning flame in the whole world in like the monastery of where it is. And any of them, in around the world have a fire taken from that place. And so I was thinking, oh, this is weird, this stuff. And the sign is like this bird as well. And suddenly loads of signs that I'd just been filming and like been coming into it. And then I looked up the, and they're saying Ahriman is sort of like, it's just kind of like Arrow Man is a sort of destructive spirit. And it comes from like spreading lies and deceit. And that's, and in the essay it was talking how sort of there's like a third coming and Ahriman's coming through. Anyway, and there's this thing, I think Rudolf Steiner also wrote a book about Ahriman. It's like, anyways, weird shit started happening when I started getting into it. And then I looked at the first spirit and it's called Asher. And it says truth and justice. So it was like really weird stuff. And then I'm like, I'm going to go and visit the place of worship in wherever it will be in London. And it was, it had moved. It was in Harrow at an old cinema. It was like weird. And I said to my mum, I was like, have you, do you know anything about Zoroastrianism? She's like, yeah, the headquarters of it used to be on our parallel road, which was number, and it was at 88, and I used to live at 88. So it was like this really weird thing started happening. So, and then, yeah, and then my friend gave me the Scared to Dance t-shirt. Anyway, I don't know if that made any sense, but it made sense. And it was sort of, I got really into sort of, I used like 2 seconds of AI, but I tried to make it look a bit like AI because I really feel like it's also like God is in your hand if your phone. It's like sort of AI is, I think it's like a new way of painting with it, and it's sort of like spiritual warfare against, I don't know. It was, but then people got really upset, being like, "Oh, use AI." I was like, it was good that it sparked that because I was like, "Yeah, this is happening. Like, it's something." But obviously, my intention is pure with it. So it was just an interesting little ride with that.
So we were just talking off air. I'm a big fan of your music videos. I think they're fantastic. And you direct them.
Yeah, I direct them and sometimes direct with my friend Flo. Yeah.
How did you come to direct them?
Well, me and Flo, just like from the beginning, we always just used to make funny videos together. And I think one time we made a video with some random director for a video called Showgirl and I like hated it, and just the experience was. And I just really love making videos. I think it's kind of hobby. I feel like for me, the songs have like a vision or a picture or a colour or a movement from the beginning when it comes through. So it's like they always take on a journey, or they connect people as well. Like we always meet funny people, and our kind of ethos is quite free with it. Like it's just, it's a music video at the end. There's like, I don't like serious stuff. And I think if it's another way of to express the song or the experience, like just to help, you know, for 4D, it kind of gives another layer, even in the music, to the song, to me.
And have you got any background in directing, or do you just completely self-taught?
Yeah, just do it for fun, really.
Have you worked with any directors in the past?
Just that director. I don't know what. No. Just me and Flo, really. I'm quite a pernickety person. I think it's just because, like, I like to make cheap videos as well. Like Echoes was probably, it wasn't even a big budget, but like even just spending a bit of money, it's a bit scary because I quite like working with a small budget because you can just, I don't like things feeling too serious or too much pressure, because I like also sometimes we have an idea and by the end it's completely different.
Yeah.
And so I like that.
Speaking of that Echoes video, it really reminded me of this Manic Street Preachers photo shoot. That's from a Melody
cool.
Maker.
That's cool.
Shoot from 1993, where the two male figures are painted in gold.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to the Echoes video.
Yeah, I never seen that as well. Yeah. So that's really cool. I need to check this out.
So where did you get that from?
Well, I wanted it to be twins, because like identical twins, because I think the idea of the song is sort of, well, the original idea was going to be twins and one of them's changing. And we thought, like, how could we make them change? And you couldn't really, wanted it to kind of not decipher, you wouldn't really be able to decipher which one is changing, and it's sort of sad as well. And then I was with my friend who did the movement directing, and we were talking, I was like, it does need to have more of a narrative. And I was also trying to incorporate, I wanted it to be statues, like in, and we were just going to shoot it in London or go to like Dungeness or something. Then suddenly it all came in one go. We're like, oh, this could be the story. This would be really cool. Yeah. Like the idea that they're both kind of just their gold, you know, they go out and do gold statue. But then one of them starts turning blue, has to leave and wants to go and be free. But then the other one sort of finds him and then they don't. And one of them kind of disappears. So, yeah. And then literally just in the net, we had the idea 2 weeks before. And then my friend Seb, he's really cool. He's from Brussels. He's really good DOP. And he did the filming for Hot Freaks. So this is another video, but he's just like, he's just so sick and has such good energy. And I called him and was like, oh, do you want to film this video? He's like, I'm doing a cycling trip around France with my sister. He was like, but I am going to be in France around this. And I was like, oh, should we just do it in France? Like, be so fun. He was like, yeah. So we just went. And he was really cool, actually, because he's got this sort of he had a friend who has this monastery near Marseille. And so we stayed there. And they were really sweet. They do like arts, like kind of art stuff. It was just like perfect. And then we just put these twins from Paris just replied to our story. And they were just like so up for it. They just came and the day before. And it was just really fun and sort of, it was cute. Yeah.
So these group of songs, Jive, Echoes, Today Might Be the Hit, are all from your upcoming album, Cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about the album?
The last album was quite emotional and like songy and light. We wanted to make it more live with the band. And but afterwards we kind of felt like the production and sort of the impact maybe felt not lost, like it was good for that, but we wanted to bring it back. So when we actually started to, we wanted to merge our product, we wanted our production to be more prominent in it. And then we were going to record it with Dan Kerry. We went into the studio really early, like this was like a year and a half ago. And I was like, we don't have the songs yet. Like it's not. And so it kind of flopped, but it was kind of good because then we just recorded the songs over and over. So they kind of had time to grow and then wrote around them. And then we had to find, and I lost my mind so much in this album because I was like, what is the string? For me, it's really important for me to understand what is the whole meaning of this world, love, this was it. And because all the songs felt really different, because he like recorded differently and like the genre feels quite different in each of them to me at the time. So then we were kind of wanted to know how to string it together. And then kind of had this idea of, I actually got, my friend took me to Spider-Verse, with an orchestra, because she knows the guy who does the orchestra. And then us two seats down was Adam Curtis. And then we ended up by having a pint with him. And I already had the idea of cosplay in my head and how kind of, because everyone feels like that, but it's just like a bit lost in time and sort of, there's all these genres, but you kind of don't feel, like you can almost try things on, but they don't really feel, well, that's my experience, it doesn't feel like you're innately one of them and everyone feels a bit janked out. And it's sort of how to paint with those in a way that feels new and like actually you're just stealing in plain sight because it's like you're really like contextualizing it rather than it. I don't know. I feel like the references and like some pop culture is so far away from what it meant. Now it's sort of just like an inanimate thing that's part of the furniture. So it's like, you can use that to recontextualize it now. You can make it into your own thing.
That's a big part of Adam Curtis's work, the most recent BBC series.
Yeah, I haven't even seen that yet,
it's
need
amazing.
To see that.
Were you a fan of his work?
Yeah, like a little bit. No, I didn't actually know too much other than hypernormalization, but it was interesting because I talked to him and he was like, I'm doing this thing about cosplaying and about how it started with like the gay voguing. So that was just funny how it came about. I don't know, he was just saying things that were in my head a lot and it was just nice to, I don't even know if I said that I was in the band or something, I just was talking to, like, I was just talking to him. I think I was just trying to grill him a bit as well, like, a bit drunk, probably a bit smart, like, be controversial with him or something. But he was cool, but...
So how did you know when the songs were ready for this album? Because you said with Dan Kerry they weren't quite fully formed.
Yeah, there was like, well, I think we just went through it and then we had a little break and then I kind of thought... okay, the tie is the factor, is everything's different, and mm-hmm. that's kind of the meaning of it, and it's and that's fine. And then we actually just, it was just, there was a lot of other songs, and it was like just trying to be never repeating ourselves in like a feeling or a colour, and just trying to eliminate stuff. And then we went in at the end actually with Dan just to redo the vocals with like a vocal chain, because we'd, all the songs were like from different places. We were like, we wanted to tie it together. And that's when that was like, this will be the end, because now we're doing the vocals over. And we kind of mixed it a bit with him. So that felt like how to tie it all together.
So you said you don't want like repeating yourself.
Mm.
So how was that for you approaching the third album? Because you sort of mentioned the second album had this quite emotional heft to it.
Yeah.
So I guess, did the third album sort of come with like a blueprint for you?
No.
Does that develop in the songwriting?
Yeah, I wanted to develop the song. I think I wanted to use a bit less words and just refine things a bit.
Some more space.
Yeah, more space, and just wanted to not, yeah, like by repeating and just sort of, I like simple songs. I like the space in between when things can shine, you know, like I like, and I felt like there was a lot of words on the one before. So I also just wanted to refine, like kind of think about the songwriting and more, and using the references as part of the songwriting in itself, or like, you know, just trying things like that.
Well, I think that definitely comes out in Today Might Be the Hit.
Yeah.
2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's a great pop song.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought was, wow, this is really radio friendly.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't necessarily associate with Sorry at all times.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's just like, in my head, this was like kind of like a funny Lou Reedy like song. But then it sort of did need to be poppy but it's also quite dark, but it's also not. This was like the only one that we kind of like, oh, we should make this fast and make it fun so people can kind of digest it as well. Not even that we ever think, oh, people need to digest this or sort of thing. But I think that's the thing, Sorry, like we do want to be poppy, because that's like, it is kind of what poppy, like obscure pop songs. It's nice to try and obscure them in a way that feels.
So is Lou Reed an influence?
Oh, yeah, I like Lou Reed.
Yeah.
He's cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I like lots of different things, but I don't know, just in my head. That's what the video is like. It was just like, I don't know, the sunglasses. You know, I don't even know if he's wearing sunglasses in that picture. But I don't know why. I just felt like it was that kind of energy. I don't know.
So how were the songs for Cosplay written? You and Louis O'Brien?
Yeah.
Had been writing together for a very long time.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
We just know each other since we were young.
Right.
And
from school?
Yeah. And we would both have songs on SoundCloud, and like we would be jealous of each other's beats, or we'd be admire them and sort of.
So what kind of age is this?
It's like maybe 14. And we both just played guitar, I think, as well, separate. And then I think we started writing together when we were about 16, mm-hmm. just like writing songs. We were in our other friend's band called Kevin. And I got asked to play drums. I was like quite gassed, I was happy about it. And but then I wrote the song for them, because they didn't have songs at that point. And then they kicked me out because I think they were annoyed about the fact that I wrote the song or something. But Kevin's actually a really, really beautiful songwriter now. But Lily like sent me some. And I remember them calling me once after school and being there. And they were like, sorry, but you're out of the band. I was like, really upset.
Can you remember the song?
It was called She's Got the Look. I don't know. It was so bad. But yeah, then me and Louis. Well, I was doing music more separate, and so was he, and like just writing songs, and then we just did the band, really. And Lincoln used to live near me, and I was around when I was like 13, because he was skateboarding, and we used to skateboard together. I thought he was really cool because he was like a couple years older than me, and he's always changing his identity. Like one day he'd have shaved head, or he'd be like a hippie. I wouldn't see him for ages, but I'd see him walking around sometimes, and he'd look completely different all the time. So, but yeah.
How do you and Louis write together then? Does one write the lyrics? Does one write the music? Do you write them together? Do you write them in the same room?
We, literally each song is completely different most mm-hmm. of the time. Sometimes I'll have written maybe like it'll be like today might be the hit. I probably have that line in my head, and I'll be thinking about it all the time. And then we'll write the chord. When the song works, it just clicks immediately. He knows exactly what I'm thinking, and I know what he's thinking. And then maybe he'll start playing the chords, and the song usually just comes out. I wrote most of the lyrics, but Life in This Body was he wrote half that, and so it depends. Or sometimes we'll write it together, or sometimes as well, we'll have a kind of line, and then he'll start put a sample in or something, and that will inform the rest of the song, because suddenly the textures will kind of will draw it out, if you know what I mean. But also a few songs on this one, Life in This Body, at the end of Any But Here, I was away and I was Life in This, I wrote a shit song called Oh Marika, and there was this bit and it was Life in This Body, and I thought, oh, that's really cool, concept. And I said to him, we should make the album called Life in His Body. And then I said, oh, you should, I think I just said it to him. And then he wrote, the beginning of Life in His Body, sent it to me. And I remember it was just, always in my head. And then, a year later, I was like, where's that song? It's so good. And then he played it again and really made it, more into it. So that was a, interesting one.
And how does that work? Because obviously you go in with your own lyrical inspirations.
Yeah.
Are they generally kind of on the same plane as Louis?
I wrote majority of the lyrics. We do write some similar songs. We know what we're talking about. He'll know, I do trust if he's that line's not good or something. But I think majority, I'll do the lyrics.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing that I feel quite strong about. So, and now sometimes it can be kind of, we can get in it can be funny. But I think we both kind of, when we're on the same plane, it just happens.
Yeah.
And when it's not, then it's not a good song for us. Or it's something to save, you know.
And where do you get your lyrical inspirations from? Is it literature or?
I think it's
other music or?
It's just everywhere to me. In a book, someone will say something to me, or in a film, or on the wall. To me, it's usually something I'm reading about, or maybe a film. Suddenly an idea will sort of be born, a concept in my head, and then things will just be unlocking it, as I'm going. And maybe write a bunch of songs, and they're almost just sketches, and then suddenly it will crystallize, and it's a dream, a waking dream. That's what it feels like to me. It's when it comes, it's penetrating image, and it's suddenly all there. I find it really hard to rewrite lyrics because, it just sort of comes out when it comes out.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's hard to revisit stuff, which is something I want to maybe get better at. But that's what has been nice, to re-record stuff, because then you can kind of play with the different versions of stuff, which is cool.
And it feels like the two of you are very much the core of the band.
Yeah.
So at what point do the other band members come in?
Well, they've just been playing with us for ages, and they did write parts and stuff on this. Me and Louis try and write majority of the song, write the parts, and then sometimes it will change when we play it as a band, and then we kind of all decide what's the best version, or they just come and play in the studio. But also because they bring a kind of raw energy, which is what we wanted to combine, the liveness and the production, to make that feel, the production not feel overproduced, but it still hits, you know.
Mm.
But they're all just really great people, good characters, and I feel we all understand what's going on. It can be tense, maybe set lists, things like that sometimes. That's the kind of things we argue, because I go crazy about the set lists.
Do you write them?
So, well, we all try and write them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, it's I like to make the samples for in between, because it needs to feel like a story. And it's difficult
to sort of hang together.
Yeah. I like how things lead into it. And we get samples from films, or, you know, samples from everywhere to, because I feel when the set works, it's almost like a TV going, you know, playing different things. That's what, in my head, they're all different characters. So sometimes it's so weird going from like a really emotional one to then like really like dance on or something. So yeah. I feel like, and I feel like it's been difficult sometimes for audience to engage with that. So I think that's just something that is important that we want to try and work on. But I think because I'm thinking about that, maybe they're thinking about different things. So that's where like for how it flows. So
yeah,
I think that's the thing that was probably the only tense thing.
That's really interesting. I've never heard anyone describe a set list as like a TV show, like a...
Yeah, not a TV show, like TV going down different TV channel, going yeah. like, or like radio, you know, because they're almost just like a collection of some different things, like, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
How has the relationship between you and Louis changed? Has it at all in the amount of time you've been writing and performing together? Because if you've known each other from such a young age,
yeah,
it's only natural that...
I mean, a lot's happened, yeah. We've had ups and downs for sure. We went through some heavy shit, so I feel like we had to decide that we wanted to come together enough to, you know, like to decide, you know, we want to do this, it's important. And so I think because we have a language between us that doesn't really have words a lot of the time, we could get, you know, we're quite passive aggressive to each other, and especially in a lot in Anywhere But Here, like it almost fed the songs. It was like an unspoken things that we were speaking through the music, and we both knew it, and it kind of fed that. But for now that was kind of over for this one, it was like we wanted to kind of think, what are you good at a bit more, like what am I actually good at, rather be a bit more just like, nah, that's not good, or, you know, I think it was a bit more sensitive and just trying to get that right, and giving away what is not our strongest to the other, even in a silent way a bit. So rather than like sharing everything or things like, I think when you want to do that, or you want to be that part or something, it's like, whereas this one, I feel like just kind of went for it, and we kind of be more like, okay, if that doesn't work, then that's just, it's not good. It's not about you. It's just about the song.
So you said there was a little bit of tension after the second album.
Yeah.
So was the third album in question at any point?
No, I think it was more just like, yeah, I think it was, I mean, we just fell out. It was just like, it was just quite a bad fallout. And I think, also because I think we've been doing stuff for so long, I think the way we were interacting with each other was becoming so toxic as well. And I think for both of us, it was just quite, just like really difficult and like not enjoyable. So it's almost nice that something so big kind of happened so that we could just like relearn how to go off away with each other. I think we're both quite difficult in our own separate ways. So I think it's a blessing for us to be able to make music together. Or like, there's no one else that I draws the songs out with me. Like he does know how to do that. Like there's something, you know, so you can't have that without the other, you know. So I think he's just trying to see that.
And going further back from when you were at school, both used to play Jimi Hendrix songs together.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, we did play Jimi Hendrix. We still do that sometimes to get a guitar. We play, like, we play Little Wing better.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I think just separately just used to play Little Wing. I feel like lots of people who learn guitar and play Little Wing. I used to love Jimi Hendrix a lot.
So were you self-taught as a musician?
I had a couple lessons, but mostly I self-taught, and I play like Beatles songs or Bob Dylan. I had some cousins and stuff, and if they would come, sometimes they would play like Bob Dylan songs and do sing-along like as a group, and so I always liked that.
On the second album, Anywhere But Here, you worked with Adrian Utley from Portishead. How was that as an experience for you? What did he bring?
I think what we struggled with is like tones and guitar tones, or things that we don't really think about. And we wanted that record to feel old, the feeling of it, the recording of it. But Ali Chant, whose studio it was, he also did a lot, kind of just... Because that album, we didn't want it to feel... We wanted to put the product... We made all the songs, and then the kind of computery bits or production bits were all played into it rather than like on top. And that was something that... So we wanted to do all that production first. So then it was almost just kind of, he helped produce the recording of it rather than parts or things like that. But it was cool. He was so sweet. But I think it suited those songs. But it was difficult for him, I think, to find a place of knowing what to do as well. A little bit for us. So, but he did. But what was good about the song was like, just it was good for a lot of space in it. Actually, that was nice, and the sound was nice.
And what made you want to work with him from the first album, 9 to 5? What was the jump between those two albums?
9 to 5, we also did that album in like 6 weeks in Bristol. Like we never done that before, because the one before we were recording for like 6 months on and off. We just go into with this guy James String, and we were doing it at home and then come. And I think it was cool for that, but it took so long to finish and it didn't feel that concise. Like, so we wanted this one to feel more like one piece together.
Mm.
That makes sense.
And you'd have had, 4 years of writing before recording 9 to 5?
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously quite sizable body of songs and preparation to go in with.
Mm.
How did you find it on the second and the new album? Almost working to, a relatively loose deadline.
Yeah.
How do you find that as a songwriter?
I do struggle with that, because to me it only feels finished when it's finished. But I think time moves quick in different ways. So a small chunk of time can happen. You can write loads of songs and that could be that. But it's good. I think deadlines are probably good, because I probably would have gone on forever, even just with cosplay. Like, I find it really difficult to finish stuff. So I guess it is good, because if you kind of know that's it, then you've been in your head, you're sort of like, that is that time, what is that? But I do think as well, like, if I think this is shit, like, I just don't want to do that yet because it's not ready. And I'd rather wait for something to feel ready than to put
out something. Yeah, I mean, that's why I was trying to describe it as a loose deadline, because both parties.
Yeah, yeah. I feel bad for Domino a bit, because this one did take its time. Like, okay. We had to re-record it, and I didn't like doing that. But it taught lessons, and I think it was good for this one to have done that. But it's nice to kind of learn how to do things differently again. Each one's had its own lessons for what not to do next time.
And this is your third album with Domino.
Yeah.
How did you come to sign with them? Were there any other labels interested in you?
I think there was a bit, like, there's just this guy, Jack Shankly, who he doesn't work there anymore. And I emailed them like a couple of years before, because I loved Alex G, and but they never replied or something. And then Jack had like bumped in some guy and came to our gig, and then he just started coming to all of our gigs. What was nice about not putting anything out for like a long time, we used to play like 4 times a week, and we just played so much over that time. So I feel like I think like lots of things can just come out of nowhere to me a bit. And it was nice to like have ground and have friends. And
were those gigs at the Windmill?
Yeah, Windmill and like Lock Tavern,
yep.
Camden, just all around really. Or we go to like Bristol. We used to just put on our own nights and like with our friends, we make t-shirts. Like, you know, and it's fun. And I feel that was, like, we were going to be a band for a long time. It was a sort of fun thing. And then, then Domino. And then we were like, oh, well, we should probably do this. Cool.
Yeah. And how do you feel about the Brixton Windmill scene? Because you're kind of lumped in with a lot of those other bands. I'm not so sure Sorry are really in with those bands.
No, that's the funniest thing. Like, it doesn't really happen as much now, but when the first record came out and stuff, like, all the interviews were just about the Brixton. And we were like, we're not from South. And also, like, I like the, they like, they are friends, kind of, but they were also just like party friends. And like, it was just because we would play in the same venues. And it was nice. I think it's nice for other people like to imagine this thing. Because even if it's not completely, you know, I don't really, but it was a bit weird because I don't feel like our music's the same. Or like, I don't really like bands that much. Like, not that I don't like them, just I don't really feel an affinity with that kind of vibe. And so it's been difficult at points because I don't really, I played a lot with things that feel out of line. But I think it's also kind of fed me to be like, fuck you, or not fuck you to anyone, but because things that feel, people are so like, what's going on here sometimes, it kind of just feeds to be like, plays the emotion of the show or something.
Yeah, I always think that critics never quite know how to pin down sorry. It's like,
yeah,
you have to be in this box or this genre. I mean, the amount of genres you've been described as is...
I think it's quite funny that. That's, yeah. Like, that's the whole point as well. It's like, kind of, with the cosplay thing, it's like, whatever. You can say, yeah. You can just like, you're just trying on. I think, yeah, I don't mind what people say about, but yeah, it's funny.
It doesn't bother you?
I don't think it really bothers me. I'm just like, well, it's just wrong, or like, that's just not true. It's kind of funny. Like, yeah, it's just people just misinformed, or they've got an idea. But I think as I get older, I want to be more in line with people that actually inspire me. And like being, I think I've played a lot of shows with deep bands is cool and stuff, but that I don't really now feel like in line with my heart. And so it'd be nice to now start playing around things that I feel really, where I really respect, and like kind of not getting that respect, but just sort of being in tune with things that feel actually aligned with me. Because I feel like I felt so misaligned for so long, and so out of place, which is fine for then, and it fed the art. But now it's sort of like I feel tired of that. I want to be more in tune with my heart.
So what are you finding inspiring at the moment?
Life is Beautiful. Which are the Jasper was in it. Jasper and Charlie, they just came in. That's like, I don't really go to gigs and stuff as much as I used to. Like, I'm not really in, so I don't really know that much. But just from the offset, I think Jasper asked me to play a little show at one of their nights. And then I just went to a couple more of their nights, and they do really cool collective of like poetry, movement, and kind of theatrical. And they're always different. But the heart of it is really pure, and it's really cool. Like, I feel like it's rock and roll. Like, I think that's where I like, that's rock and roll. Like, amazing. Just, they're all amazing players, and the art is sick, and it's pure, and it's cool. It's like, feels fresh and inspiring. But I don't really know other. I haven't really been listening to, like, I haven't seen any more like gigs. Like, I don't watch bands anymore. It's just like, it doesn't, I'm just not in that world anymore, I think. Just like, but I think I'm just getting older as well. You know? I don't know if that makes sense.
Does the public perception of sorry bother you at all? Does it align with how you see either yourself or the band?
I think it can be misaligned a lot sometimes. And I think people expect you to be someone or something a lot as well. And I don't like how you can't change. Well, you can change, but I don't know. I don't like people. I think, like I said, like, I don't like to specify so much about stuff, because I'm always changing. My ideas are always changing. And it is funny when you get locked in with things that don't feel similar to you, because it's weird. So, yeah, I don't like that sometimes. I don't like that. I think it's funny also because I think the songs are quite vulnerable. It's like, it's quite personal sometimes. So it's just funny. Like, if you don't know someone, you just sort of see them and you think, you might draw a picture of them in your head just from other people that you think are like them, or like, you know, you just, and so it's a funny, it's kind of a weird thing. But I try to be more protected with interviews or things like that. I don't like to do too much, because I sometimes as well, if I'm nervous or something, or it's a not even a bad day, just I think if someone doesn't really understand me, it can, I feel like I can come off as rude, or I don't really get my words across. And it's like, then I've just said something that's like, I feel like that's not at all. It was like, ruins the whole perception of something, or the art of it. Like, do you know what I mean? So I think that's been a difficult thing that just kind of we're trying to avoid.
And does that, putting that vulnerability in your songs, make you slightly reticent in the future in terms of protecting yourself?
I don't mean to write, like, I think that's just what comes out. So I don't feel scared. Like, I think it is emotion. Like, maybe I won't be emotional sometimes. I make funny dance song sometimes, or you know, I think it's just what I'm good at. It's the only thing I know how to do.
No, I agree, yeah. But it wouldn't prevent you from...
No, I don't think so. It would prevent me from doing interviews or doing things that I don't feel comfortable with, yeah. Because that's where... Or like pictures, or just like, I think just I put so much care in the art or the videos or just small things, like the details. And so I think when something's sort of misaligned or done kind of quickly without a good intention, feels quite sad to me because it feels like it ruins everything that I've just been trying to work.
And so work how does for. That feed in with being in a band and having to be on social media and
yeah,
be in the spotlight? I kind of sense that your relationship with social media might be similar to mine, which is yeah. We have to do it, but we don't really want to do it.
Yeah, like I don't do TikTok. I don't want to. Unless, I said, like, maybe if I found something really funny that was, like, the same thing, I'll do that. But even, yeah, just Instagram stuff feels so difficult to... No, it's just, like, I didn't even want to talk about the fact that it's difficult. But it is something that you... That's the thing, like, I feel like with story, it's, like, it is pop in some way, and it's able to sit in somewhere. And so, like, it'd be stupid to not use things to like push some ideas or push some stuff to people, because you know people do like that. So it's like I think it's a funny fight in my head and probably lots of people's heads, just of the balance of not being too annoying about not doing stuff, but doing stuff, I mean you might as well do it in a way, and just putting being like I'm just doing that and like not spending too much time. I think before just like if I'm even being hateful to it, that's taking up my time. Mm-hmm. So I might as well just, how can I do this in a way that feels slightly different or interesting, or not even different, it's just like serve the purpose and then just do it. Just for like a post or something. But I think, yeah, it's not something that I want to get too involved in. And I think people actually also might swing back to real life, in real life things, which is kind of happening a bit more now. And I feel like lots of people just don't take the step. They just like, I feel sad for a lot of music fans who just do stuff. And I'm like, it's like TikTok videos or live videos. It's like in that same font that's over everything. And it's like so disgusting to me. It like makes me feel sick. Like, and I really like an artist. So I might see that. It might put me off. And like, I don't want to see that. So there's no way I want us to be putting something out like that. It's like, people don't just like that. I think, you know, I don't think you have to do anything really, you know. And so that's what I think Life is Beautiful are cool, because I think I mean, I don't know if they're a bit young, but as well, like, I think they're just really setting tone. Like, they don't do that, and it's cool, and it's like, you know, and I think just on a bigger scale, you know, you don't have to do these things. Or if you need to do them, you can also do it in your own way. Like,
I was reading in an interview, this is from about 5 years ago, that you have little ambition. And we're just making some music to see how it goes. Do you still feel the same way?
No, I like having ambition. Like, I think I want to make good art. I think before it was like music, making music with friends. And I think now I'm still making music with friends, but I think it's also about art in my head. It's kind of a bigger thing. Like, it's sort of just funny how it started like that and sort of how things grow.
So do you think that... sort of personal ambition could go from music to another...
Yeah, I think I still do music, but I don't know yet. It would be nice to play bigger shows, but I don't... Not even bigger shows, just... I think my ambition is to now be more in line with what I want to say and be surrounded by people that I really respect. And not that I haven't respected before, but just, like, creating, you know, having good conversation. I feel like a lot of my life, but I felt quite shut down, like in myself, because I felt out of place, or I don't like really. So it's kind of made me feel inward. Whereas now I just think my ambition is to be more outward and put back good and more fresh energy and stuff, and to bring that up.
Well, I think you're a brilliant filmmaker. I love the music videos for Sorry. Would that be a direction you'd want to go in, either for directing other people or short films or...
Yeah, I'd actually really like that. I write down like a bunch of ideas all the time, and I think I will try and make stuff. I don't know if I like me and Flo, like make small videos for other bands, but I think for me it's like the style is, I'm not very good at like doing other style, and I don't really want to spend time sort of making stuff to churn it out, because I want to keep, it's sort of like music can sometimes feel a bit more worky in some sense, whereas not worky, but it takes up so much like emotional. So, but I love making film, making the videos, and I feel like it takes me on cool journeys, and I want to, that's where I feel like I want to inspire people as well. It's just make stuff, you know, because some, and things are just personal, I think, and it, you know, I think there's just weird stuff happening, and everyone's able to, like, you know, everyone's making stuff on TikTok. It's like, it's just, I don't know, it's just a lot of fun, funny stuff's happening. I don't know if that makes sense.
And you went on tour with Fontaines DC last year on their Romance tour. How was that? Because that was a big tour.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. We went on tour with them like maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago with Shame. It was like they were playing Fontaines before us, and then Shame. And it was such a funny tour because people, that was when they were just started getting, like, a lot of people were there for them, or they were there for Shame, and like people, everyone was led, went for things, what do we answer? It was so funny. But we're good friends with Graham, and I really respect him. I really like love his words. So it was cute to go on there. It was cool. It was weird though, because they've gotten so big so quick as well. Like, it was quite difficult to play such big rooms. And I think as well, their music's quite like powerful and more like, you know, hardcore, so it's easy to get into, so it was difficult to kind of align with that.
And you played a few festivals in the summer. You played End of the Road and Latitude and All Points East. How do you find playing the festival gigs?
Oh, to be honest, festivals are so weird. I don't know if I'm super depressed sometimes, but I just think some festivals is like, because there's so many festivals now, people are just like, sometimes there's just like people just holding on to the dregs of life in it. And sometimes, like, I think festivals can be quite depressing sometimes. All Points East was depressing. It was weird because I think it was sponsored by like Metadata as well. So the screens like were like curved and they looked like the aliens was taking up the...
These are the screens on the stage
behind
you.
Yeah, they were so big. And I don't know, it just had weird energy. But like, I thought End of the Road was sweet. That was a good show for us. That was like really sweet one. I like festivals sometimes, but they just go up and they sometimes they're cool, sometimes they're weird for me. I find them intense, but it's nice when it's a good show. I actually watched Fatboy Slim. I never seen him before. We played at Latitude, and I was gonna go back after the show, and I saw some friends. They were like, "Oh, you should stay." And I randomly watched his show, and he had sick visuals, and it really inspired me because it was loads of stuff I was thinking about as well. But yeah, but festivals, well, they're fun to play, but they are a bit weird. I feel like the energy's dark in the world, so it's hard to tell what's going on.
You're heading out on tour first in North America in December, followed by the UK in February, then Europe in March. Where are you looking forward to playing? Are there any places that are new?
I don't know. No, not new, but I'm looking forward to all of them. Should be cool. America should be cool. A bit scary, but it should be cool.
Do you enjoy touring then? Or do you find it a bit of a challenge?
I do enjoy it when we're happy. It's just so up and down.
Right.
It's just a lot. It's just a lot. And it's difficult to look after yourself in your mind. I struggle to be around people for that long. But you get into it. It is something like you can't just, you know, it is something. And because we've all been friends for so long, it's sort of like, so high or so low. It's like people can drive you mad, or they can be like, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
So why can never be in a band? I have no idea how everyone gets along.
I think you just start doing it, like, and then you're like, well, like, I don't know what else to do now. Do you know what I mean? As well, like, you're sort of like, well, we should probably just do this. Like, you just got to get, like, obviously you want to play the shows, but I think when things feel so difficult, it's probably like, why am I doing this? Like, you don't know, it's a funny one. But I think it's something you can't describe, and the connections that we have is kind of, you can't really describe it. And it's like, it would be sad, it's valuable in my heart.
And have you started writing any new songs yet for another album?
Yeah. We got a bunch of songs from that, left from this one too, that we might put out, but yeah, we moved into a new little studio in Map Cafe in Kennistown. It's a really sweet venue, actually. Kind of like community good vibes there. And so been writing lots of songs. We have fresh energy from there.
Well, we look forward to hearing them.
Nice.
There's one final question. What are you listening to at the moment? Is there anything that you could recommend that you'd heard in the last 12 months to the listeners?
No, I don't like this question.
We can leave that then.
I'm sorry.
Asha, good luck with cosplay and the upcoming tour, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really cool.
Thanks to Asha Lorenz from Sorry, and be sure to check out their new album, Cosplay. If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our club night and film night events at Scaredtodance on social media. Next week, I'll be joined by Matt Berninger from The National to discuss the film Mistaken for Strangers, the music documentary directed by his brother, Tom Berninger, about the band. This podcast was recorded and produced at Third Floor Recording.